Oscars come out of the break, driving in big runs, 36 RBIs since the break, the most in the American League. Back to the scoreboard, that's going to score a run, he's in there. Valera swiped his hand over home plate before Kimbrough could get there. Called strike three, that's the ball game. Jordan Romano, 1-2-3 in the ninth. Reese McGuire with a pivotal infield hit.
Hey everyone, this is At the Letters, presented by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Ben Nicholson-Smith here with you. We've got a ton to talk about. The Toronto Blue Jays just not playing good baseball, so we got to make sense of it. And for some help on that front, I've got Nick Ashbourne here with me. Nick's work, I'm sure lots of people know from Sportsnet, from Yahoo Sports, from his own podcast, The Blue Jays Happy Hour, which is a must-listen every Friday with Andrew Stoughton. So, Nick, before we dive into the Toronto Blue Jays and everything that's ailing them right now, welcome. Thanks for making the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. If we can avoid diving into the Blue Jays for even a second here, that's always a nice relief.
That's probably, yeah, definitely worth attempting to do to keep our sanity as we watch this team lose a lot of winnable games in the last little while. Arden Zwelling will be back next week. He's off this week, so Nick has graciously agreed to join. And a shout out as well to our producers, Christian Ryan and Nicholas Andrade, who are helping put this together. But Nick, let's dive right in. I mean, you look at this team, I feel like for most of this summer, they've been in it. And, you know, to varying degrees, they've been competing. At some points, it's looked like they were heading toward one of those incredible runs like we saw in 2015. Now, as we record this here on the 25th of August, I mean, it's not looking good. They're 65-59. They're 12 games out of first in the East. They're 5.5 games back of the wild card. The playoff odds say they're only at 8.4%. I mean, but before we get too granular here, what did you make of this team and where they're at?
It's not looking good is something of an understatement, I think, when you're talking about, yeah, a couple of weeks ago, the playoff odds were sort of, yeah, in the 40s. You convince yourself it's kind of a 50-50 proposition because of how well some of the guys are playing. Springer was really carrying the team. It looked like they had some reinforcements on the way in the bullpen with Pearson and maybe even Julian Merriweather. Pearson's probably still going to come back, but they're not firmly out of it, but they, you know, they couldn't afford to have a stretch like the stretch they've had. You know, like their playoff hopes were so delicate. And when you have a stretch over, you know, a couple of weeks where you're playing well under 500 baseball, like it can collapse awfully quickly. And it's happening in all these close games.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you think about just how many painful losses, and maybe this is just the nature of being a team that's on the cusp of, you know, almost being in or almost making a run. It's like every loss feels more painful. And I guess like at a certain point when the losses stop being painful, that's when you know you're out of it. And that's when you know, like you've gotten into, you know, Baltimore Orioles territory where you just expect a loss. Not that the Blue Jays are there, of course. But to this point, because they have been on the edges of things, everything has been analyzed very closely. It seems to me that there have been a disproportionate amount of these painful losses for this team.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that that's a feeling. I think that's the objective truth. They've been brutal in one-run games. They've been even worse in extra innings. They're consistently finding themselves, you know, within a run or tied with a team in the seventh or eighth inning and finding a way to lose. Like when you're watching the game and the Blue Jays are tied 3-3 in the seventh, do you think they're going to win against anyone? Like I don't have that confidence right now because the history is showing that they're finding ways to lose these games. And there's concrete reasons for it too. It's not all fluke. Like the bullpen is kind of four pitchers deep at the moment. So if a couple of them are unavailable one night, you're in a real hole by the time you reach the ninth or if it gets to extra innings.
Totally. And I mean, that's being generous to Simber and Richards, who I assume are the 3-4 in there along with Romano and Meza. But it's, yeah, I mean, the bullpen's been bad all season long. Let me bounce this off you. I mean, so we've seen the struggles, the late game struggles, the struggles with runners in scoring position. Whenever I kind of think about this, or whenever I'm asked about this, my initial kind of thought is that it can't possibly be something that's sustainable or something that this like that is this core flaw of this team. But where do you land on that as you see this team go like 1-for-12 every single night with runners in scoring position?
it's an interesting thing because part of my brain says, yeah, this has got to be a small sample size fluke. You know, earlier in the season, they were literally leading the league in hitting with runners in scoring position. So it's not like these guys are incapable of doing it. It's happening over a short period of time. The flip side of that is the, you know, the quote unquote human element. And the way that plays in is that when you struggle at something, it's easy to keep fixating on that. And the players are aware of the fact that they keep failing to come up in this big spot. And, you know, it can make them, you know, grip the bat a little tighter, for lack of a better word. So sometimes these things, maybe they start as a bit of a small sample size fluke, but then it can get in people's heads to an extent. And there really is something to that. Now, do I believe that these guys are going to come around? Absolutely, because they're really good hitters and they've done this before. But when something like this, you know, carries over, you know, a couple games, maybe even, you know, a couple series, it self-perpetuates to a degree.
Yeah, I think we've seen that in the last little while. And then, you know, when you have an offense that even in the early stages of a game is underperforming, then you get to, you know, the late stages, you're in these 1-1 games, there could be some element there of a self-fulfilling prophecy. But it's even, I guess, bigger picture than those struggles with men in scoring position or struggles late in games. I mean, the Blue Jays are just not scoring right now. And, you know, they came back home after that horrible road trip. And it's like, okay, they're gonna come back to Toronto, great hitters park. Like they were 9-2 there their first time. And then they've scored like a total of 11 runs in the 5 games since coming back to Rogers Center. And this team, like, yeah, they have good starting pitching. But to me, if you're only scoring 11 runs in a 5-game stretch, it's actually almost remarkable that they've won twice in that period of time.
Yeah, I mean, if this team is built on its offense, right? Like even though the starting pitching has been good, it's arguably been better than they had a reason to expect. So if this team is going to compete, it's by scoring runs. And in this stretch, since since their big homestand, you know, they've hit kind of middle of the pack, and that has caused fewer runs because they haven't done it in timely situations. But even if you take that out of the equation, they've sort of hit at a league average type of clip. That's not nearly good enough for this team to win. And they've had a couple of guys who just haven't produced anything. Like Vladdy is the one that everyone's been talking about. But Bo is right there as well. And so the two of them, and this is through Tuesday's game, have produced, you know, minus 0.2 WAR over the last 14 games with a total of 3 extra base hits, one of them a home run. So those are two guys you're really counting on, and they're at the top of the order. They're getting tons of at-bats, and they're not doing anything with it. And you know, I think Vladdy's going to bounce back. I think Bo's a little bit banged up. I'm not saying that's an indictment on these players. Their futures are where they're going. But right now, they're not giving the Blue Jays enough.
Yeah, 100%. And you wrote about this in a piece that went up on sportsnet.ca Wednesday, kind of looking at Vladdy and, you know, these slumps, what we should read into it. And you know, as you hinted at there, it's not as though we're going to just, you know, forget what he did in the first part of the season. He's an incredible hitter. But as you say, I mean, this has been a stretch where they really could have used, you know, just a bit more offense. Like the starting pitching has been so good for this team that, like, if they had scored, I'm not even saying to their early season levels, but if they had just scored 5 runs a game as opposed to 1 or 2 or 3, they might actually be holding their own here in the American League wildcard race.
Yeah, if they're scoring 4 or 5 runs a game and they're getting starting pitching consistently, taking them 6th or 7th inning with 1 or 2 runs, you know, you can't even blow that many leads, the type of leads that they would have had if they'd had good hitting. And there is an alternate universe where they continue to go on this run on the strength of their starting pitching. And, you know, I feel bad for some of those guys like, you know, Ray and Ryu and even Matz, who's been really good of late, who are putting up great numbers and they're not being rewarded for it. I think the Blue Jays are literally 500 in Robbie Ray starts this year. And this guy at this point leads the MLB in quality starts, which is absolutely wild. Just as a side note, that's wild that happened based on what he did in 2020. But yeah, these guys are not being supported kind of at all. And when you don't score and you don't have a bullpen, it's really easy to lose a lot of games.
Yeah, it definitely is. That is, it's also crazy about Robbie Ray, to go back there for a second. It's almost like DeGrom-like when you think about the lack of support. And this is a guy too in Robbie Ray who never recorded an out in the 6th inning last year. And now he's someone who's just completely powering through the 6th into the 7th, even into the 8th at times. We'll talk a little bit more about Robbie Ray in the second half of the podcast here. But I guess, Nick, to go back to the overarching, to the big picture with this team, like, are they in it? Are they still contending, or is it over?
I don't think it's over. I don't know. It brings me back to, you know, one of the formative movies of my childhood, which is the first Lord of the Rings movie. No, maybe it's the third Lord of the Rings movie. Now I'm losing it. And someone asks if there's ever been hope for Frodo to, like, bring the ring to Mount Doom and finish the job. And Gandalf said, there was never much hope, only a fool's hope. And I think we're in only a fool's hope territory. This could happen. They could go on a run. The talent is there. Springer could come back. Other teams could struggle. Like, the Red Sox could struggle again. The A's, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They've got games against the Yankees and A's. They could sweep those games. It's all on the table. But realistically, so many things have to happen at once. And for only even one of those things to happen is tough. And to get them all to happen is, you know, it's borderline impossible. So 8% sounds about right now.
Yeah, that happened pretty quickly. I mean, as recently as a couple of weeks ago, I thought they were making it. Like, I thought that they were going to make this happen. And it seemed like they had patched the bullpen enough. And then you kind of dream on Pearson and Soria. And you say, okay, the rotation's great. The offense, even despite all their struggles, like, they still have the second best offense in baseball, trailing only the Houston Astros. So, I mean, the ingredients were there, but I tend to agree with you. Like, I look at where this team is, and it's really hard to see them making a kind of extended run that they're going to need, because they would have to play so well for such a long period of time. So, you know, it's not to the point that you start, you know, resting guys for 2022 or anything like that. Like, you're not completely out of it, but I think at this point the odds are clearly stacked against them, and it's going to require an immediate and very, very powerful turnaround from a team that hasn't really shown itself capable of that in the last couple of weeks.
I think we were also a little bit kind of biased by what we saw in 2015. Like, we'd seen the story before, right? We'd seen a team with a great run differential that wasn't quite living up to it, making big moves at the trade deadline and forging ahead. And when they had that homestand, it did feel like 2015 again. But even at the apex of what this was, they never quite reached 50-50 on the odds. Like you, I think kind of in my heart of hearts, maybe I believed that it would happen nonetheless, but I'm not sure it was ever as close to happening as some of us really believed, because it was so similar to a story we'd seen play out in the past.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, it almost reinforces just how impressive that 2015 run was, you know, because this team was able to replicate that for about 10, 12 days. And that was a really fun couple of weeks for Blue Jays fans, I think. But to do that for 2 months is a different challenge altogether. And I guess I had a bit of a take, because in the second half of the podcast, I'm going to throw some assertions, some takes, some thoughts.
The way you say takes is with so much distaste.
Yeah, a take, if you want to call it that. But I had one originally about Jose Berríos, as Nick knows, and we had to shelve that one after the way his start on Tuesday unfolded. But, you know, to go back to 2015 and the David Price analogy, you know, Jose Berríos would have been that guy for this team, and he just hasn't stepped up in the way that the Blue Jays needed him to. So, you know, even though I still think that the big picture body of work for Jose Berríos is tremendous, and I still think that he's going to be a very good pitcher for this team, the reality is he's struggling right now.
Yeah, and I don't think he ever necessarily had that run in him that Price had that's truly ridiculous. I think back to CC Sabathia with the Brewers, those guys who came in, you know, took the reins as the ace of a team and led that team to the playoffs. Berríos is more of a really, really trustworthy, solid guy, which is a funny thing to say right now, given what you guys have all seen in his last start. I wouldn't say he's more solid than spectacular. That's probably selling him a little bit short, but he is really a consistency, durability, really, really good as opposed to being great type of guy. And I'm not sure he was ever the person who was going to put the team on their back and drive them to the playoffs. Like, that was really going to be the offense. And hopefully for the Blue Jays, it was going to be a little bit of improvement from the bullpen, arguably thanks to Soria and Hand, and that really, really, really hasn't happened, especially in Hand's case. You know, Soria's been better for the Blue Jays than Hand by not playing.
100%. I mean, Hand has destroyed the Blue Jays' chances in a couple of games. I mean, yeah, that's a trade. That's a trade we can certainly say the Blue Jays lost. But yeah, the Berríos one, probably more open for discussion. He's, you know, when you talk about a guy who would take a team on his back and really carry a team, I do agree that there were some expectations on Berríos that he might be able to do that sort of thing. Then when he reaches 88 pitches in that game against Washington, he tells Charlie Montoyo and the Blue Jays, in my opinion, to his credit, he goes, hey, I'm tired. Like, this is probably a point to turn it over to the bullpen. Ends up catching some flack for that, which in my opinion, not really fair, because you want your players to communicate with you when they're tired and when they're kind of reaching that end point of their effectiveness. But still, it's not, you know, the ideal still is someone who can take you, carry them, on your back for a little while. Maybe Alek Manoah becomes that guy in a couple of years. Like, some might say he's already approaching that territory. But, you know, regardless, the problem with this team probably hasn't been the starting rotation.
Yeah. And in the context of this team, like with this bullpen, and we're going to keep harping on it, and that's somewhat unfortunate, but that's also the situation we're in. In the context of this team, guys who go deep into games, and to be fair to Berríos, he's traditionally been that. So I don't want to say that he's not that guy. But when, you know, the fans see him kind of tap out of a game, I understand why that's frustrating for them, because they know when Berríos comes out, the next guy who comes in isn't as good, you know, with the exception of, you know, Mays and Romano, perhaps are more likely to give you a clean inning than Berríos. But because the bullpen is so weak, you know, the starters, you kind of want them to go longer. And you mentioned how Robbie Ray has been pushed. And I think at times that's actually been a problem. There's been games that he's given up a lot of damage late in games. And the reason he's getting pushed is because the alternatives aren't good. And you don't want to, you want to be in a position where your starters giving you 6-7 innings is a luxury, not a necessity. And for the Blue Jays, it's kind of a necessity right now.
100%. Even the relievers who, you know, we talk about as though they're so trustworthy, right? Like Jordan Romano and Tim Mesa. I mean, the reality is Tim Mesa, still coming back from TJ, he's not someone the Blue Jays want to go to in back-to-back games more than they have to, or basically at all. And then in Romano, yeah, he throws 100, and like, good for him for leaning into that fastball and putting it over the plate and challenging guys. But at the same time, we've seen the slider lose effectiveness, seemingly. There was one outing over the weekend against Detroit where he threw just one slider. And I mean, if you're throwing 100, like, you probably can get away with that at times. But the reality is, especially, and again, it doesn't look like the Jays are going to be making the playoffs, but you think about if they were to make the, you know, division series, for example, you try to use Romano 3 times in a 5-game series. Well, by game 2 or 3 of that series, the opponents are going to be used to seeing that 98. They're going to be used to that release point. If he doesn't have the slider to keep them off balance, like, you could even see their quote unquote reliable relievers running into some struggles as they try to get overexposed because the Blue Jays don't have a ton of alternatives there.
Yeah, Romano is far from automatic. Like, if you think of the other teams who are sort of playoff teams in competition with the Blue Jays, and maybe if you think of a wild card scenario, Romano comes out in the 9th to protect a 1-run lead. Like, you know, most teams have a better option than that. Like, most really good teams. And I think in an ideal world, Romano is maybe more of a setup guy, more of a fireman, or whatever it is. And that's not to say he's not talented, and that fastball is huge, and the slider was so good in 2020, and maybe he can find it again. And we know that the foreign substances ban might be playing a role in that, and we'll see where that goes going forward. But like you said, like, we're kind of talking like, oh, you know, Romano and Mesa, you can really count on those guys. Well, you can really count on those guys in the context of the Blue Jays. There's a lot, like, think of the Chicago White Sox who come into town with Craig Kimbrell and Liam Hendricks. Like, that's a different level of trust. And the Blue Jays don't have that with their top guys now, but the rest of the bullpen is so much of a problem that we don't even really have time to worry about Mays and Romano.
Totally true. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Charlie Montoyo here, because there's, I think, an impulse when a team is struggling to try to find someone to blame or something to blame. And for a lot of Blue Jays fans, at least based on what I can ascertain from Twitter, from some of the fans that, you know, you hear from via Fan 590 or via social media, it seems as though Charlie Montoyo takes a decent amount of flack for where the Blue Jays are at. And so, Nick, I know you've looked at this closely. Where do you land on exactly how much of the blame should land at the feet of this manager?
It's an interesting question. And I think, like you said, it goes beyond baseball. It's human. People love to find a scapegoat in kind of any situation. And I understand why some of that has fallen on Montoyo, because he makes some decisions that are dubious to the outside. And sometimes he doesn't defend those decisions particularly well. There are great things about Montoyo. I think the players really like him and respect him. You know, he's held together a room through very difficult circumstances. This is a nomadic team. For much of the last 2 years, people probably don't appreciate how difficult that is and how hard that's been on the players and the coaching staff. However, you can point to individual tactical decisions that are very, very questionable. Like I think about getting guys to bunt with two strikes, which I don't think has ever actually worked this year. Maybe it's worked once or twice, but it's definitely struck out people a couple of times. And I think of Santiago Espinal striking out in extras when they needed just one run because they wanted to keep that bunt sign on. Like, you know, that's a bad decision. There have been times where he's trusted Trent Thornton, you know, way, way, way too much in a way that just doesn't make sense. Like Trent Thornton is just a guy at this point. I know that they traded for him and people talked about his high spin curveball before, but his stuff didn't tick up when he went to the bullpen, which was kind of surprising. And he's been pretty bad for the vast majority of the year and keeps getting big spots. Taylor Salcedo got a weird level of trust and he brought him in a couple of big spots. I know the other day it was the right call to bring him in actually, and then it didn't work out because Semien made that error. But that was actually a good decision that looked like a bad decision because people were like, oh, Simber is there. He's closing out the game. Why would you bring in Salcedo? The reason they did is because the Detroit hitter, the catcher, I forget his name now, Castro, he had been so bad against left-handers, like truly, truly beyond bad. And they had a good matchup there. And so that made sense. So he probably caught unfair flack for that. I think overall, the thing I always come back to is there's a lot of good qualities about Charlie Montoyo and we're right to point to them. But I think you can probably find a manager that has those good qualities, but also has better tactical acumen as well. So he deserves credit for the things that he's good at. But I don't think those things are necessarily incredibly rare. I think you can find people like that who are capable of holding together a room, who are experienced managers, and are good that way. And I think you can have it both ways. And right now with Montoyo, I think they kind of have it one way.
Really interesting. And yeah, I think back to when they hired Montoyo, and I remember writing at the time, like the questions the Blue Jays should be asking their managerial candidates, kind of thinking along those lines of how do you navigate potentially difficult situations, which, man, being a major league manager, that is a tough and often thankless job. But you make a lot of good points there in your kind of breakdown. To me, the aspects of Montoyo's managing that sat kind of the least well with me over the course of his tenure here would be in the 2020 season when the Blue Jays would lose, or even early this season, they would lose games sometimes in painful fashion. And the response would be, hey, we're holding our own, we're battling. And to me, it's like, these are the major
leagues.
We're
having fun. That yeah. was a famous quote at one point, like, we're having fun. It's like, that's not the right message.
It's not the goal. The goal is to win games. Like, that is the mandate, or at least it should be. And so to me, when that messaging was happening, I was like, it just doesn't land. It didn't land with me. But that messaging has disappeared lately. Or I shouldn't say disappear, but it's certainly become much less frequent. And so we're left with more of an acknowledgement. When something goes wrong, we're more likely to hear from him the acknowledgement that that sucked. That was really frustrating. That was a game we needed. That play didn't go our way. I can't believe the umpire's call. Like just some candor, some honesty. To me, at least, that lands really, a lot better. And I think tactically, of course, you can find stuff and you have to find every edge you can as an organization. But the biggest reason the Blue Jays are losing games this year would be to do with the performance of the relievers, as I look at it, performance of the relievers, and then the slump of an offense that's underperformed. And we, you know, as much as we talk about the bullpen, it's also worth noting, like George Springer has played about 50 games this year. That's a big absence for this team.
Yeah, and before we leave Montoyo, first of all, I think you're right. Like, I'm probably a bit lower on Montoyo than you are, but I think you're right in that he's not the person to blame. But one thing that's interesting, I remember being at winter meetings and I wrote a feature about how the direction teams were going with managerial hires. And so it was around the time Rocco Baldelli, Chris Woodward, guys like these were getting hired. Craig Counsell was a couple of years before that. And the Blue Jays very noticeably zagged. Like they were going to a lot of younger player, like former players who they figured would connect with the players, but also had this analytical ability, were willing to be creative with their, you know, with their various strategies on offense and in terms of their pitching. And because Montoyo had been with the Rays, I think people assumed there might be more of that than there ultimately was. And they went with kind of an older, a bit of a lifer. And this is not to criticize him. He's had a very illustrious career in baseball. But it's interesting that the Blue Jays went in a different direction than it seemed like the whole league was going in. And most of those hires that have been that kind of recent former player, but also statistically savvy guy, most of those have worked out really well. And it's not clear that this has worked out well for the Blue Jays.
Well, we will leave it there for now. When we come back, I've got some takes. Nick will have some responses. We'll see where that goes. That's all coming up on At the Letters. We are back on At the Letters, and it is time now for Keeping It Light, presented by Miller Lite, the original light beer. So, Nick, recently we saw the Yankees and White Sox play the Field of Dreams game. Really cool event. And it got me thinking, where else could MLB play a Field of Dreams game? So if it was up to you, if Rob Manfred came to you and said, Nick, you get this call, where would you place the next Field of Dreams game or games?
Okay, so this idea is one that I know without reservation they would not do. So okay. I'm going to start it there. But when I think of the phrase Field of Dreams, I think about, you know, some of the, you know, the dreams that it takes players to reach the major leagues, and a lot of them are coming from places like the Dominican, like Venezuela, like Cuba, and they come from very modest backgrounds and they sort of fight their way to the major leagues. And I wanted to kind of honor that journey to some degree. So I was looking for a place. Okay, where's a place? I picked the Dominican because there's so many places, you know, so many great players in the Dominican in the league right now. So I'm like, where in the Dominican can we play a Field of Dreams game where they'll build a stadium from scratch, you know, and invest some money for development? You know, it's right next to Haiti as well, which could use some recovery money. So there'd be lots of good PR stuff that could go into this. So I found a place between the hometowns of Vladdy Guerrero Jr. and Jose Ramirez. So those hometowns are Don Gregorio and Baní in the Peravia province of the Dominican Republic. I think you build a field right in between those two towns. I've got the coordinates. I did some Google Street View to find a nice place to put a field that where you could see the ocean as well. Some palm trees. It's really beautiful. I mean, they'd have to buy it from whoever owns it now. But if you guys want to look it up, it's 18 degrees, 14 minutes, 21 seconds north, and 7 degrees, 17 minutes, 2 seconds west. It's the perfect place. Build a ballpark right there. Have the Blue Jays and the Guardians. It's a great opportunity for the Guardians to get some new branding, like be under the spotlight with their new, now not horribly racist name and logo. So I think, you know, there are probably a couple places you could put it in the Dominican between various players. I picked those two as two of the big stars in that region. And I just think that would be a cool way to do it overseas. I know they've played games in Puerto Rico, but that's a little bit different because they play in sort of a well-established stadium. I'm saying, okay, let's show off the aesthetic of where so many of our great players come from. Let's do some development work there. Yeah, so Manfred, I think I've given you all the details that you need. Just you're ready to break ground.
Right down to the coordinates. I mean, all
I looked
all
up
he
how to read
do.
That, and it might still be wrong, to be honest. I'm not much of a sailor myself, but that's the best I could do.
Well, I think that level of detail is probably more than anyone at MLB offices could have expected. So that's great. I like it. I mean, that would be a really cool game to watch. I'll throw one at you. So this is maybe I'm violating the spirit of my own question here, but I in the ideal form, it would be a series of Field of Dreams games that goes from west to east across Canada with the Blue Jays playing in each one. So you would have the Blue Jays playing the Mariners in Lake Louise. You would have a game in either Saskatchewan or Manitoba where the Blue Jays play the Twins. Then you would have a game in London. This is my real answer. You would have a game in London at Labatt Park where the Blue Jays would play the Tigers. Incredible. Then you would have a game out east where the Blue Jays play the Red Sox. I think so. This might have to take place over the course of years, but to me, this would be incredible. I don't believe this is in the works whatsoever, but I would love to see it happen. And if I had to pick one of those, because you know I shouldn't permit myself too much leeway with this question. If I had to pick one, it would be Blue Jays Tigers, Labatt Park, London, Ontario.
So it's just a coincidence that you had the entire world to choose from and you picked a park that currently already exists a stone's throw from where you grew up.
It's true. I mean, maybe it's not a coincidence. We'll leave that to the viewers and listeners of ATL to determine, but I think it would be an awesome pick.
I like Lake Louise. I think that would be a beautiful backdrop for a baseball game. The Prairies one, you know, maybe the aesthetic is a little too close to the corn. But yeah, no, I think there's definitely something there. There's, you know, the Blue Jays have tried to expand games across Canada and kind of continue to build that brand as Canada's team. And I always like to see that outreach where they're able to connect with other parts of Canada, not just Toronto and Ontario.
For sure. You got to do it before the Expos arrive and start tearing away at that brand equity. But no, in all seriousness, it really is great to see baseball across all of Canada. And that would be a great way to do it. So make it happen. Let's now turn back to the Toronto Blue Jays. And as mentioned before, I've got a few, I guess you could call them takes, ideas, premises. I'm going to throw them at you, Nick, and just kind of hear your thoughts. See if you agree with where I land on these three topics. So we're going to start with Alejandro Kirk. And look, this guy is a great hitter. He makes excellent, excellent contact. So take nothing away from him there. But defensively, I see the defense as being a problem at this point. I mean, we saw it on Friday when the ball went through his legs on a wild pitch. He hasn't really made up for that with, you know, particularly strong throwing. I think it even impacts game calling. Like, I'm seeing instances where, for example, on Sunday, Brad Hand is pitching for the Blue Jays, and there's a runner on third base with Kirk catching. And I just see in those situations, you know, are you going to call for a breaking ball in the dirt, like with a runner on third base? So to me, it even impacts that. You've got situations late in games where you kind of sense that John Schneider and Charlie Montoyo are trying to find ways to get Reese McGuire in for defensive purposes. And so it's not to cast blame on the guy. It's not to say that he's not ever going to get better because his pro experience is limited. He's like 23 years old, like cut him a break. But at the same time, right now, I see this defense as being a problem.
Yeah. And in terms of agreeing or disagreeing with that, it really is about the present versus the future. Like, is he not good defensively now? Absolutely. Like, there's no part of his game defensively that you could point to and say, oh, he's really good at that. Like, his throwing isn't particularly strong. The blocking is an issue. The framing isn't great. The game calling you can mitigate, right? Like, you could do some really advanced sort of wristband work with him. You could be pretty regimented on what you want him to do. Ideally, you want a catcher who can go by feel a little bit. But that's one of the ones that you can take and run with and take it kind of out of his hands a little bit. Like you said, he's so young. And I think people forget that traditionally you leave catchers in the minors longer than anyone else because you want them to develop that side of the game. And you bring up the athletic outfielder and you bring up the pitcher who throws 100 and you let them develop at the big league level a bit. But you don't do that with catchers as much because you're worried about these type of things. So is it a problem? Yes. I'm still starting Kirk, though, and I'm not even talking about developing Kirk for the future or what that looks like. You know, I'm not sure he's the future catcher of this team. I just believe, and I know that some of McGuire's numbers this year will dispute that, but I just believe McGuire is a black hole offensively. Like, if you look at his projections from now, he's projected for like an 80 WRC plus. And Kirk is a plus in your lineup, especially at a time when your lineup is struggling. So I guess I agree with your premise that his defense is a problem, but I also would continue to go with him despite that. And sometimes I think baseball fans seem to fixate on the weaknesses of a player. Like, most players aren't going to be complete. They're going to have strengths and weaknesses. Like, Bo Bichette's a good example. He caught so much flack for his defense throughout the year, but he hit so well. Like, what's the overall value at the end of the day? He's a really good shortstop. Like, there are bad moments defensively. There are great moments offensively. And at the end of the day, you take that 10 times out of 10. Like, most teams, vast majority, would love to start Bo Bichette at shortstop. And I don't think Kirk is quite at that level, obviously. But it is the same thing where his bat, especially in the context of being a catcher, is quite special. And you run with that and you live and die by that.
Yeah, I would agree with your agreement there. I think that when you look at a player who struggles defensively, it's tough to watch. And, you know, I think about Lourdes Gurriel Jr., who I find myself... just, it's not good. It's not good. And, you know, the numbers back that up. Outs above average. He's first percentile, as in 99% of players are better than him defensively. It's bad. Like, he regularly has been making misplays. Now, again, you see him out there doing the work behind the scenes before games. Good for him. I'm not trying to dunk on the guy, but just looking at what is in front of us, it has not been good. And yet, he also has positive attributes. And I think that you know, you can see teams like the Rays playing Nelson Cruz at first base. They know he's not a good defender at first base, but they'll play him to get him in the lineup. The Padres reportedly had some interest in Nelson Cruz. They have no DH, so they would have been playing him at first base. So there are teams, there are good teams out there that are willing to sacrifice some defense some of the time. And I think with Kirk, he is a very good hitter, and that you're probably right that that is where we need to be focusing the discussion from this point on for Alejandro Kirk.
Yeah, I mean, he's sort of, I mean, historically good might be an overstatement, but I have some stats here on Kirk's hitting right now. So this is as of Wednesday, so our Thursday listeners, this might have changed. I'm sorry. Anyway, so his 126 WRC plus is the sixth best among catchers with 100 plate appearances over the last 2 years. So that's a top 10 number. Only 19 times has that been done in the past 10 years, catchers, and over a full season. Only 19 catcher seasons. So about two guys per year are doing better than what Kirk's done so far. And he's only 22, and he's probably going to get better as a hitter. You know, he might regress a little bit too. Like, he might end up around there. But whatever it is, there's potential for improvement. And that's and also, of those 19 seasons, five of them are Buster Posey. So it's the same guys who are doing it over and over again. If you take him at his projection, which is a 107 WRC+, which is slightly above league average hitter, at a position, only 57 times has that been done over the last 10 years. So that's, you know, about six guys per year. So his defense is probably going to improve as he gets older. No, is it going to be great ever? Probably not. There might be a body transformation thing to happen with him, somewhat like Guerrero. We saw what that did for Guerrero. You know, there's no doubt that Kirk carries a lot of weight, and that might affect the way he's moving behind the plate, and there might be something that can be improved there. But this is a rare bat behind the plate, and I think that that should be appreciated. Like you said, that should be appreciated first before we spend our time nitpicking all his defense. And I know that that's always been the opposite. People have always said catchers is defense first, then hitting. But the reality is that they're 1/9 of the lineup, and especially with a guy who's young enough that it's fair to presume he'll get better, I just don't think it's worth spending too much time tearing down what he's done on defense.
Very fair. Okay, so second notion to throw here. You know, sometimes I hear this idea around the Blue Jays, especially as they've been scuffling in the last few weeks, and you hear this idea that, hey, this was never supposed to be their year anyways. This was supposed to be a development year. They had a lot of growth still ahead of them. And, you know, realistically, their best years were likely to be 2022 to 2024, let's say. And when I hear that, I just don't agree with it. Like, I just, it doesn't sit well with me. And, you know, I think that we're looking at a team that has some incredible talent, that has some incredible veterans performing at extremely high levels. We're looking at a team that, yes, has run into obstacles when it comes to where they've had to play and the injuries. And I get that, but they've still had a lot of things go right. And they had an opportunity in front of them in the early part of this month to take full advantage of that and to build on what would have been an incredible story and reach the playoffs. And it doesn't look like they're going to do that. And so to me, I just kind of reject that notion that this was never supposed to be their year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think everything you said applies to 2020, right? Like, they made the playoffs. I know it's the expanded format, yada, yada, yada. They were nomadic the entire season. And yeah, these guys are really young. And there's a reason to say, you know, it's unexpected that they made it that far, and that was great. But 2021 is different. And it's different for some of the performances that you said, like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in the first part of the season. Like, whole franchises haven't had a performance like that over 3.5 months. Like, there's plenty of teams have never seen a hitter at that level. You know, Marcus Semien has given them, you know, top five MVP type of production, gold glove type of production at second. We know after he had that rough error, but he's been incredible at second as well. Robbie Ray is another free agent. So they're, and also, you know, they signed Ryu and Springer. Those guys are at the height of their powers. Arguably, I'd say Ryu's already a little bit on the downturn. So these guys aren't necessarily getting better. The opportunity was there. The Yankees were vulnerable, especially early in the year. That hasn't really manifested in the last part of the year because they've been so hot. But 100%, 2021 was a singular opportunity. It's not going to be easy to get back to it. And a lot of these core players they have, like Guerrero Jr. and Bichette, you know, they're going to get significantly more expensive through arbitration. And people don't like to hear about the financial restrictions. I know fans don't because it's not their money. But the reality is this is the way the team's going to operate. And when Guerrero and Bichette and, say, Teoscar Hernandez, guys like that, get more expensive, it's harder to go into every offseason and sign a big fish like Ryu or Springer. Like, there's going to be off seasons they go into maybe at the end of Guerrero's arbitration year, something like that, when he's making a ton of money, and they are making more of the marginal plays and they're not going for that big fish every single time. Like, they're able to do that in part because the guys that under their core are so cheap.
Totally. I mean, you know, at a certain point, like between Springer and Bo and Vlad and Teoscar, like, you could be looking at more than half your payroll tied up in three or four players. And that's just a reality. So, I mean, the reason I land on this is being, hey, it is a missed opportunity, like, or it's looking as though it will be a missed opportunity, is also, I mean, that's not to denigrate the season that they're having. I mean, most teams, 29 out of 30 teams, are disappointed at the end of the year. Some of those teams miss opportunities along the way. It's okay. Like, pro sports are hard. Major League Baseball is incredibly hard. But I just don't agree with the idea that this was never, they never had a shot, that it was never realistic. Like, they had a shot. And like 2 weeks ago this time, if we were having this conversation, we'd be talking about, you know, how do they find ways to, you know, make their way through the wild card game? Or how do they find ways to make sure that their players are, Springer's fully rested for the playoffs, you know, if the last 2 weeks had gone differently. And so to me, that is a missed opportunity, not one to, you know, it's not one that you need to necessarily find scapegoat after scapegoat for, but it is the reality that they could have done a lot more with where they were.
Yeah, as of right now, they have the fourth best Pythagorean record in franchise history. You know, this franchise has been going on for decades. This is a team with tons of potential that if they had had a different bullpen, they'd be able to win some close games. You know, maybe could have made some noise in the playoffs. Would they have been as good as, you know, some of the other teams, like maybe the Astros or the, you know, the White Sox? Yeah, I'd probably bet on the White Sox over them if they made the playoffs. But in baseball's playoffs, you never know. And this was a very profound opportunity. And we saw this. I don't know how many crossover listeners we have with the Toronto Maple Leafs. We saw this with Toronto Maple Leafs. They had a lot of young players who were very cheap, and they were able to add veterans. They added the wrong veterans. The Blue Jays actually added the right ones. But once those players became expensive, it became far, far more difficult to build a team. And that's a salary cap league. And I know baseball is different, but, you know, the Blue Jays ownership will kind of impose their own cap on what they want to spend. They're not going to spend at an unlimited clip. So this opportunity right now is distinct. And like you said, it looks like they've let it pass them by.
For this season, at least. Now, as we look to 2022, they're still in a great spot. They still should be, you know, a team that contends again year after year. Just because 1 year is a missed opportunity certainly doesn't take away the opportunity ahead of them for many years to come. And we know that this is still a strong farm system. It's a front office that by and large has been pretty sensible and has improved the team in a relatively short period of time. Doesn't mean that we just hand them executive of the year every season, but they have generally progressed the team in a direction that makes sense. So this offseason, they've got some huge decisions ahead. And this brings me to my third kind of statement for you to get your thoughts on whether you agree or disagree here, Nick. And it's to do with the two big free agents that they have. And, you know, in Robbie Ray and Marcus Semien, we're talking about two of the players who will be most coveted in all of Major League Baseball this offseason. It's a very strong free agent class, including guys like Scherzer, like Justin Verlander, some very strong pitching. Lance Lynn was going to be part of that group. He obviously won't be. You've got a great class of shortstops with Correa and Javi Baez and Trevor Story. And so it's deep. But Robbie Ray and Marcus Semien are going to be very coveted players. So either would be a tremendous help to the Blue Jays. Both, I'm sure, will have conversations with the Blue Jays this offseason about potentially returning. But what I will throw to you is the idea that Robbie Ray, despite all the contributions of Marcus Semien, I will say to you that Robbie Ray will actually be the harder of the two to replace if it comes to that point and the Blue Jays are looking to replace them in free agency.
This is really hard. I don't want to agree with you because I think I kind of agreed already sort of 1.5 times, and 2.5 out of 3 isn't ideal from a, you know, debate perspective. I think sure. I do ultimately have to. And the reason I'll say that is because of the alternatives available. Now, let's be clear. Semien is a better, more valuable player. He brings a ton on offense, defense. He's even run the bases better this year. And he's a great sort of steadying presence on the team. I love everything that Marcus Semien brings. He's going to cost a ton of money. Ray will also cost good money, a little bit less. So first of all, there's the idea that, you know, you sign Ray, you have more flexibility elsewhere. But even if we just talk about replacing that player, When it comes to Semien, there's quite a few infielders available. Like, you could go internal. You could give the spot at second base back to Biggio. I know people don't want to hear that, but if you do that, again, you can spend money elsewhere. You've got guys like Kevin Smith and Otto Lopez that could compete for spots on the infield. Again, that's only a wise move if you're going to spend the money elsewhere. But even if you just look at free agency, which is presumably the direction they're going to go, you got the shortstops. You've got Story, Seager, Correa, Baez. Then you've got, you know, at second base, you could go for Chris Taylor potentially if the Dodgers don't like the value there. At third base, you've got Eduardo Escobar and Chris Bryant if you want to move the infield around. And normally when this many guys are coming up in free agency, it's sort of a musical chair and they kind of replace each other. But a lot of these guys, that's not going to be the case. Like, Colorado's not going to sign one of these guys and they're going to lose Story. I'm not convinced the Mets are going to sign Baez to be a second baseman. He's probably gone. Chris Bryant is not going back to the Cubs. That's just not what they're doing. The Astros generally don't spend the type of money that a Correa will cost. So I think a lot of these guys are going to be available for the Blue Jays to, I mean, they're not going to be cheap necessarily, but there's going to be a route to getting one of these really premier guys. Whereas in, if you look at the pitchers who are available, you mentioned great pitchers, but are Scherzer, Greinke, Kershaw, Verlander coming to the Blue Jays? I don't think so. And it's not because the Blue Jays are a bad franchise or anything, but these are legendary pitchers who are kind of ring chasing in their last years, and many of them will probably re-sign with their own teams. You know, you've got, who are some other guys? You got Marcus Stroman. I don't know if you were there the day he left, Ben. I was there. He's not coming back. You know, you got Corey Kluber. You know, is he going to be a difference maker like Ray? Far from a guarantee. You know, guys like Duffy, you know, I don't know if he's someone I see as a Ray replacement. You've got a couple guys. You've got sort of Kevin Gausman, Eduardo Rodriguez, John Gray that are maybe in that thing. But the difference with the infielders and the pitchers is that with pitchers, everybody wants them. Like, every team who is even remotely competing is going after these pitchers. Whereas with the infielders, you might have some premier guys where you're one of only sort of two or three teams that are really going to spend enough money that they're serious about it. So I think it's going to be harder to get a great starter than it is to get a great infielder in free agency this year. And if they're willing to spend money, infield is probably the way to do it, which means you can replace Semien. You know, I don't know, replace Semien. You can do slightly worse than Semien, probably. Maybe a younger player, potentially, with someone like Story.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if we look at these guys as both being top free agents, which they will be, they're top players, they'll be top free agents. Well, okay, to replace either, you're talking about a downgrade in all likelihood. So the downgrade from Robbie Ray, you're probably, as you outlined, totally agree. Greinke, Scherzer, Kershaw, those guys are, like, Kershaw's not signing with the Blue Jays. I'll tell you that right now. It's just, it's not the way
he looks good in blue already.
He does, yeah. But yeah, the same with Verlander. Like, it's just really, really hard to imagine. So, you know, the downgrade then, because historically it's been hard to, not impossible. You have your counterexamples, your Ryu, you've got your AJ Burnett. They've done it, but it's hard to sign starting pitchers to play in Toronto. And Kevin Gausman considered the Blue Jays. He was in talks with them just last offseason. He considered them. So, you know, it's doable, but in all likelihood, the drop-off is pretty big from Robbie Ray to the tier of starting pitcher that would be willing to sign with the Blue Jays. So that's a pretty significant thing. Not to say that they don't have good internal options, but you always need more pitching.
I mean, I'd say they don't have good internal options. If you're talking about who's coming up and being, it's Nate Pearson, yeah. And that's it. Like, if Nate Pearson doesn't hit, which is based on his health, like, you can't count on him. Who else is there who's going to be a good starter for the Blue Jays? Like, I don't believe in Thomas Hatch. Maybe some other people do. I know the Blue Jays do more than I do, but the internal options, like, I outlined some of the infielders there, and I'm not saying I'm a huge Otto Lopez guy or, sure, you know, Biggio's been fine at times. I think he's actually probably better at second base than he is floating around doing positions he's not great at. But yeah, there's not a lot of internal options for the Blue Jays at starter.
Right. I mean, I guess they're top heavy in that sense because, you know, to go into the season with Ryu, Barrios, Manoa, you feel really good about that. Then, yeah, like you said, depends on how much you believe in Pearson and Hatch. They would be on paper probably your 4-5 right now. Trent Thornton maybe stretches out going into the, yeah.
That's tough.
So you're right. The back end, they're top heavy. They need to be adding to this rotation without a doubt in the offseason. Then in contrast to that, they are just generally a stronger offensive team. They generally have had a lot of success signing position players. This is a place that position players are happy to hit in, happy to sign in. Toronto is an easy sell for position players for obvious reasons. You get to hit in a lineup with a lot of other great hitters. Certainly, it's an appealing place to play and hit. So I think especially when you look at the depth of this class, there's a case to be made if you're the Blue Jays for obviously pursuing Semien, setting a value. Maybe there's a deal to be done on day one of free agency. Great. Or maybe Semien wants 5 years and $115 million, as he should. And maybe
and
that
to
process
play shortstop,
takes,
potentially.
Sure, which is something the Jays can't offer. And so that process could play out for a long time. And if that's the case, maybe there's a case to be made for waiting, kind of like they did with Semien this year. And then at a certain point when the market's played out a little bit, you can be selectively aggressive on guys. And that's the kind of, I know for fans, it is a trying process to wait that out and to play that long game. But we know front offices do that. And sometimes it works. So all of that to say that, you know, Ray and his absence, if he does leave, that's a very glaring absence for this team.
Yeah, and this is also a very small part of all this. But if the Blue Jays got one of those big-time shortstops, which I don't think is off the table at all, you could potentially make that Bichette to second move. Like, if you, Semien wasn't maybe enough of the guy to do it, but if Javi Baez walks through those doors, maybe it is. You know, I think, you know, they talked about with Lindor. If the Blue Jays had actually gotten Lindor, Bichette was going to move for Lindor. So if you get one of those guys, maybe you're able to make that move. Maybe that improves your defense. And then there's also just the fact that investing long-term in position players tends to go better than investing in pitchers because of the whole fact that pitching is a horrible thing to do to your arm and it's totally unnatural and guys' arms tend to fall off and you never know when that's going to happen. So there's, yeah, like you, and I like that your point about position players are more likely to want to come to Toronto. It just seems like that's all more likely to happen on the position player side.
For sure. For sure. I wonder if, you know, if that window is maybe passed for Bichette to be moved off of short. I wonder if it's kind of his position now, but you know, for the right guy, you never know. Nick, this has been great. Thanks so much for making the time. This is much appreciated. Always great to hear your insights. We'll look for more of it on Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, Yahoo, your podcast, of course, Blue Jays Happy Hour with Andrew Stoughton. Thanks so much.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on.
Awesome. Well, that is it for us this week on At the Letters. Next week, we'll be back with Arden Zwelling. Thanks, as always, to producers Christian Ryan and Nicholas Andrade. And thanks, of course, to our presenting sponsor, Miller Lite, the original light beer.